Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Welcome. So today we're tackling Aravind Adiga's The White Tiger. It won the Man Booker Prize back in 2008.
Right. A huge deal. And it's not just, you know, a well-written novel. It really lands like a journalistic punch.
Exactly. Adiga was a journalist for Time, and you feel that. He's not trying to paint some rosy picture of India.
No, quite the opposite. He kind of rips the cover off that whole economic miracle story that was big back then, exposes the class conflict bubbling underneath.
It's structured brilliantly, too, as these letters, like a confession, almost, to the Chinese premier, Wen Jiabao, which is such an interesting choice.
It is. It immediately reframes the narrative looking east rather than just west.
So our plan today is to really unpack this. What's Adiga getting at about freedom, about, you know, the real cost of getting ahead when the system feels completely rigged against you?
And it all centers on this one character, Balram Halwai. His journey is, well, it's epic, from what he calls the darkness of his rural village
to the light of the modern city, Bangalore, yeah. Eventually.
Yeah. Balram starts at the absolute bottom, lowest caste, born into servitude, basically. But he's sharp, really sharp.
And that's where the title comes in, right? The White Tiger.
Exactly. A school inspector sees his potential and calls him that, a white tiger. Something rare, you know, maybe born once in a generation.
It's such a powerful metaphor from the start. It sets up this idea that he's exceptional, but maybe also dangerous, like a predator needed for that jungle.
It definitely foreshadows that he won't just accept his fate. He's destined for something else. But before we get to his transformation,
we need to understand where he came from. That pressure cooker, as you called it.
Right. The darkness.
Okay, so let's dig into that. Laxmangar, his village, dominated by these landlords he calls the animals, the stork, the buffalo. What was life actually like there?
Oh, it was grim. Constant debt, exploitation. Balram's smart, like I said, but poverty yanks him out of school. He ends up working in a tea shop.
Just grinding poverty.
And real violence, too. Not just economic.
Yeah.
His father dies of tuberculosis.
Right, from the coal dust.
Yeah, working for the landlords. It's just, It crystallizes how disposable the poor are in that system. Their lives are literally consumed.
Mustis isn't even on the table. It's brutal.
And this environment, this desperation, it sets the stage perfectly for Adiga's most famous idea of the book.
Mm-hmm.
The rooster coop.
Ah, yes. The rooster coop. It's such a chillingly effective metaphor. Let's spend a minute on that because it's not a physical cage, is it?
Not at all. It's psychological. Balram figures this out. He says the coop is guarded from the inside.
What does that mean exactly? How does it work?
It's about conditioning. Centuries of it.
Yeah.
And crucially, mutual surveillance. The servants watch each other. They see their friends, their family get cheated, beaten, jailed.
They see the slaughter, as Balram puts it.
Yes. But they don't rebel. They're paralyzed.
And a big part of that paralysis is family obligation, isn't it? The fear of retribution.
Absolutely critical. If one servant steps out of line, betrays the master, harms the system, the consequences fall hard on their family back home. Instantly.
So they police themselves. The cost of trying to break free is just too immense for most. You can't risk your whole family.
Precisely. And understanding that is what sparks something in Balram. He sees that the only way out is to somehow cut those ties, to become essentially an individual free from that collective burden.
Which is a terrifying thought in itself.
Totally.
Okay, so that leads him to Delhi, into the light, supposedly. He gets a job as a driver.
Yeah, for Ashok. He's the son of the stork, the main landlord from back home, but Ashok is American educated. Seems different, maybe more liberal.
So Balram is out of the physical darkness, but the city brings its own kind of education, a disturbing one.
It really does. He gets this driver's eye view,
mm.
sitting in the car, practically invisible, but hearing and seeing everything.
And the contrasts must have been stark, living in some squalid servant's quarter while Ashok lives in luxury.
Exactly. Below a fancy mall, even. It's a constant reminder of the gap. And initially, Balram kind of looks up to Ashok. Maybe this is his way out, working for a good master.
Was Ashok really that different? Or was his liberalism just skin deep? Because Balram's loyalty starts to fray pretty quickly, right?
It does. Because Ashok, despite maybe meeting well, is totally caught up in the system. Balram sees it all, the tax evasion, the shady deals with politicians, the big bags stuffed with cash.
The bribe money.
Yeah. Balram learns firsthand that corruption isn't some side issue. It's the engine. It's how things work in this new India.
And then things take a much darker turn. The incident that really changes everything.
The absolute turning point. Ashok's wife, Pinky Madam, she's driving drunk one night.
And she hits and kills a child.
Yes. And the family's reaction is immediate. They pressure Balram, basically force him to sign a legal confession, to take the fall for her.
Wow. Just like that.
Just like that. And for Balram, that's the moment of absolute clarity. He sees how utterly disposable he is. His life, his freedom, means nothing compared to the inconvenience this would cause the family.
They don't actually end up using the confession, do they? But the damage is done.
Irreparably. It destroys any loyalty he had left. Then Pinky Madam leaves Ashok soon after, and Balram sees his master, vulnerable, lost, kind of morally hollowed out.
And crucially, still carrying around large sums of bribe money, like that 700,000 rupees.
Exactly. Balram sees Ashok not as a master anymore, but as weak, as an opportunity.
He realizes this is his chance. It's now or never. Stay in the coop or break out.
And he understands breaking out requires something drastic, something violent. He plots it out over 5 nights. Night 5, he calls it. It's not impulsive rage. It's calculated.
And he knows what it means for his family back home. Retribution is inevitable.
He has to accept that sacrifice, to sever that connection to the coup completely. That's what sets him apart. He finds that necessary detachment, that moral blankness, maybe.
It's the climax, the murder itself.
It's swift, brutal, a rainy night, a broken bottle. He kills Ashok, takes the money.
And flees, not back to the darkness, but deeper into the light, to Bangalore.
Right, the tech hub, the symbol of the new India. And the first thing he does is shed his old self.
He renames himself Ashok Sharma, takes his victim's name, the irony.
It's incredible, isn't it? A total act of self-invention. He uses the stolen money and everything he learned about how the system really works.
The bribery, the connections.
To start his own taxi company, White Tiger Drivers. And he becomes successful, a proper entrepreneur.
A job creator, respected, but built on, well, murder and corruption. He even admits he uses the same tactics he saw his masters use.
He's quite proud of it, in a way. He tells the premier, I am a self-taught entrepreneur. That's the best kind there is, trust me. It's this chilling suggestion that for someone like him, the only path up is through immorality.
So pulling back to the big picture themes, Adiga seems to be saying corruption isn't the exception. It's the rule. It's the very structure.
Yes. And Balram's freedom, his escape from the rooster coop, it comes at this absolutely horrific moral price.
That line sticks with you. I was looking for the key for years, but the door was always open.
The door was open, but walking through it meant becoming something monstrous in a way.
It also meant rejecting family, didn't it? Especially his grandmother, Kusum, who always seems to be trying to pull him back into that cycle of obligation and debt.
Definitely. Those traditional ties, which are often romanticized, Adiga shows them as potential chains. Another bar of the coop.
And the way Adiga tells the story, the literary craft is just brilliant. That dark humor keeps you hooked, even when the subject matter is so grim.
The satire is sharp. And the epistolary style, writing to Wen Jiabao, it's just genius. It frames India's struggle within this larger global context of emerging economies, not just through a Western lens.
Plus Balram himself as a narrator. Wow. He's charming, he's funny, he's incredibly insightful, but can you trust him? He's killed someone.
Completely unreliable, yet utterly compelling. You're drawn into his worldview, forced into this really uncomfortable relationship with him. Do you root for his escape? Do you condemn his actions?
And the symbolism, like the chandelier, he eventually gets a symbol of his arrival, his success, but it literally hangs over the darkness of how he got there.
Yeah. It leaves you, the reader, in this deeply unsettled place. That moral ambiguity is profound. Is he a villain or just a logical product of a villainous system?
The book doesn't give you easy answers. It forces you to confront your own lines. What would you compromise under that kind of pressure?
Ultimately, I think what the story really drives home is the devastating human cost of inequality. When systems are fundamentally rigged, the celebrated idea of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps might actually require sacrificing your own humanity.
And it makes us question our own comfort, doesn't it? Our own complicity, maybe like Ashok's, in systems that create these pressures, even if we think we have good intentions.
A powerful, unsettling thought to end on.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Apatra Foundation.